Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Holly Lipman is on the line. Holly, as I said, you went down very well. Thank you for talking to us again here on 101.9 Hi FM.
Well, the pleasure is mine. Thank you for having me back.
So, Holly, last time we spoke about the Guardians of the Wall operation and the international reaction. We delved into that into incredible detail. And I thought this time perhaps we could examine your involvement in the Abraham Accords. You were involved with that process in some manner, were you not?
Yes, I was.
Tell us what you were able to tell us.
Thank you for saving me. You are sensitive and kind, because I was about to say, people ask me very often about it, and I can tell you certain things, but clearly the reason why I can't tell you everything is for two reasons. One, there were other people besides myself, and I would be compromising trust with them if I spilled the beans, so to speak. And second, there is confidential information. So, and we're embarking on a third venture. I guess what would be breaking for you is I am hosting the Saudi ambassador to my home over the July 4th weekend.
You preempted my final question this afternoon. So let's run with that, because that clearly is the prize, is an agreement with Saudi Arabia. Right. Is that going to happen? And specifically, given that Netanyahu's left and there's a new, very unwieldy government in place.
Yes. Well, what's amazing about the ambassador is, one, she's a woman, and she's a woman of color.
Wow.
So she's also at the highest level in the Saudi royal family, so exerts a tremendous amount of influence, very sophisticated, brilliant, educated in the United States and abroad. So she understands the issues very well. I believe that we have a lot in common and we have a strong alignment. Clearly, I am worried that Saudi Arabia did reach out recently to Iran. And that worries me the most, because the goal is clearly normalization with Israel and then some kind of, hopefully some type of alignment, defense agreement of some sort with the Arabian Gulf countries and Israel. You know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. I think the theme that I kept on using, and I'll give some context to the Abraham Accords. So I had been working on this for about the last 4 years. I had a kind of epiphany where I said to myself, where can I make the most difference in helping strengthen the American-Israel relationship, and where can I do the most as a Zionist? Yeah. And clearly, when you look at that, you see Iran is the existential threat to Israel, along with Turkey and other enemies of Israel. So you look to the Arabian Gulf. They don't like to be called Persian Gulf, so you have to always be mindful of that. And I think the main theme that I constantly emphasize in my trips to the United Arab Emirates and Saudi Arabia was that I kept on reminding them, not that they didn't know this, but that in your own backyard, there are three superpowers. And in your Arab backyard, none of those superpowers are Arab. Moreover, two of the three covet your land and your money. There's only one that doesn't covet your land or your money and actually has no grievance with you whatsoever. So that was a little bit of the backdrop. And then I think what really moved the Abraham Accords forward, ironically, was Trump, in a way that a lot of people wouldn't realize. Saudi Arabia's oil facilities were attacked, Aramco, by Iran in a highly effective stealth attack. The Patriot missiles that Saudi Arabia paid billions for never even took off.
Yeah.
And that deeply, deeply shook up the region, because here they saw President Trump, the tough, strong, muscular president of the United States. Here an ally is attacked. Not since the Persian Gulf War. I don't think we saw the territory of a sovereign nation infringed upon as it was by the attack by Iran on Saudi Arabia. And yet the United States really didn't have much of a response at all. And I think that moved them all closer to a notion with Israel. Israel's in the region. They see America as retreating from the region, which opens up opportunities for China, which is really our major competitor and major challenge in that part of the world. So I think that's pretty much the backdrop. What I could tell you how the genesis of this, if you will, is I went on a trip with my family to the United Arab Emirates and Saudi Arabia at the invitation of the royal family with the Hirshhorn Museum. It's an art museum. It's part of the Smithsonian Museum. And I used that opportunity to meet with their leadership. I function as a political insider in the United States, if you will. I'm very close with leading political figures on both sides of the aisle. I've built up strong friendships with them. When they visit me, often they stay over at my home. I've been helpful to them in their campaigns. And I never asked for anything. And this is over a quarter century. So here I asked many leading political figures in the United States to say, I need to meet with the leadership in these countries. Can you help me do this? And they were the ones that facilitated the meetings. And in those meetings, I said to them, I want to help you. That I told them very clearly who I am. I'm a patriotic American and I'm a Zionist. And I think Israel is in good shape. And I think America is in good shape. But I think our friends, meaning you guys, I think you need help. And I'm happy to help you for nothing in return. If you want to know what my agenda is, it's what I shared with you just a moment ago, which is hopefully normalization with Israel and hopefully some kind of military cooperation with Israel as well. That was my goal. I never thought perhaps I'd see that achieved even in my lifetime. But then the real catalyst that brought it all together was the annexation of parts of the West Bank. Because when that happened, that really shook up Bahrain, Saudi Arabia, and the Emiratis. And the Emiratis told me very clearly, Israel can't have it both ways. Either if they want normalization, it's either normalization or annexation. So an article was put together that appeared in Yediot Ahronot by Yusuf Al-Otabi, who is the ambassador of the United Arab Emirates to the United States, in which he made the case very effectively. And it was very much debated. What I can tell you is that David Friedman, the American ambassador to Israel, who's very sympathetic more with Netanyahu, he was going for annexation. He basically told Bibi that, and this was before the presidential election in the United States, yeah. He said, take it. This is your last chance to enhance Israel's sovereignty. And if you don't do it, if Biden gets elected, you'll never be able to do it. And if the Arabian Gulf countries want peace with Israel, they'll make peace with Israel. Maybe it'll be next year or 5 years. But if they want it, we'll have it. So let's go for annexation. And that was a potent argument. So I had to be able to make the case against that. And the case against that was, one, here you're going to have a peace agreement with, here you're going to have a peace agreement with Israel, and with the, Arab world. And by the way, my grandson is running around, so if you hear
that. No, we can hear that. That's wonderful. That's fine.
I know. No, my apologies. So that's why I got momentarily distracted. So here was a unique opportunity to have peace with a very valuable member of the Arab League and an increasingly important Arab nation. And if it starts with them, it will continue with others. So that was a case. And I also made the point that Israel doesn't need to absorb more Palestinians. I mean, that is something that I think Israel needs like a hole in their head. Moreover, I ended up going on television making the case where I mentioned that I spoke to senior leaders in both the Democratic Party and Republican Party who were against annexation. Basically, very few people were really in favor. Europe was against it. Good part of the Israeli population was against it. Even Republicans had issues with it. The Democrats were certainly against it. And I thought that Israel was going to be gaining something that would be very risky for Israel and losing what could be a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for peace with an important Arab country. So that's kind of the backdrop. And I'll pause for a moment. I know I don't give you much of a chance to ask me questions.
No, but I'm actually, I'm hanging on every word, and we do only have about a minute to go. But I am interested in your take on where this goes, because we need to bear in mind that Israel now has the most right-wing prime minister in place that it's had perhaps in its history.
I know. But with a coalition of a left and middle parties and, you know, the radical Islamist party, which I think is very troubling. Rama, you know, Ra'am.
Ra'am, yeah.
Ra'am. So that's another whole issue. We could speak about that another time. But where it's going, that's a great question. I was just on Saudi television, actually, last week, where they asked me questions like you. And the one question they asked me, which was a very challenging question, they said, we're all a believer in a two-state solution. We think that's the answer. And they said, Bennett appears to be more adamantly against it than even Bibi was. So how is Saudi Arabia and how is the Biden administration going to work with this new Israeli administration given that? So that's a whole great question, and maybe for one of your other guests.
For our next discussion, because
right.
We've got our fingers into you, and we're not letting go. We have to leave it there because I need to do news on the o'clock. But thank you so very much, Holly Lipman. Once again, fascinating chatting to you.
Same here. Thank you very much.